I'm your host, Jenny Worthington, and I will be introducing you to people and organizations around the world who are working for animal welfare. We're being called to participate in making the world a better place, and the people I will be talking with are on the front lines of critical work that we need to know about so that we can support them. I hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. Welcome back, everybody, to Hello Animal Talks. I'm Jenny Worthington, and I am highlighting people around the world who are doing amazing work for animals. And today, I'm so excited to have Anjali Ranadive from Jaws and Paws in California. And she's going to introduce herself to you, and then we will find out all about what she's doing at Jaws and Paws. So welcome, Anjali.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be talking with you. But yeah, my name is Anjali. I'm a wildlife biologist, and I've been working with wolves for about 6 years now. I started my own sanctuary called Jaws and Paws, and it's for neglected and abused wolves, wolf dogs, and other animals. And so right now we're kind of just working on growing our sanctuary, solidifying new habitats for our animals, because we're pretty new. We've only been at this location for about 2 years. So yeah, I can't wait to talk to you about everything we're doing, and I'm excited. Thank you so much for reaching out.
Absolutely. Well, I have to tell you that wolves have always been a favorite animal of mine. I love them. I tried to actually, when I was I'm maybe 18, I tried to get a job with a man who had been written up in the Midwest, who had a wolf sanctuary as well. And I had always, you know, kind of been taught that you just sort of persevere in trying to get a job. So I wrote him, and he said he didn't want me. And I wrote him again, and he said, I don't want you. And I wrote him again. I wrote him again, and he goes, I'm going to call the police if you don't stop bothering me. So I didn't get my chance to work with him. But I was a bird keeper at a conservation center in Washington, in Front Royal, Virginia. So I did get a chance. They had maned wolves there that I did not work with. But
yes, those are beautiful.
Yeah, I saw them, but I didn't work with them. I took care of the birds, which was pretty amazing. But
That's because birds are kind of my other passion. Sorry, the service is terrible. But yeah, birds are definitely close to my heart also. So we have a connection there too.
I love birds as well. I did. I grew up with parakeets. We always had a parakeet.
Parakeets are the best. Yeah, the one you just saw, she's an Indian ringneck parakeet. And so we get a lot of our animals from either owner surrenders or the shelter before euthanasia. So she was actually an owner surrender, and they had said her foot got caught in a toy and they cut it off, which is crazy. So
yeah.
Just some of the things people do, it's just unimaginable. But
Well, on your website, it says Jaws and Paws, Women for Wolves. So do you only employ women?
No, so right now we're all volunteer based. We don't have any employees, but our volunteer program is called Women for Wolves because it's kind of more catered to women, specifically women of color, women who from low-income communities, or women who've been through anxiety, depression, PTSD. We kind of cater to women specifically just because animals changed my life, and wolves changed my life in so many ways. And I suffered from a lot of mental health issues, including depression and self-harm and cutting. And one of the only things that really, you know, brought me out of it, and that still brings me out of, you know, when I start to get to that dark place, is has always been animals. And so I guess it's not like we've restricted, we're not, you know, prejudice against men at all. We have male volunteers too. It's just kind of more catered to women so girls feel comfortable, and also because wolves in general are very, very female oriented. They are more attracted to female energy than male. And it's different with every species. We work closely with a monkey sanctuary called Animal Tracks, which they're amazing. You should definitely, I'll connect you with them. You should definitely talk to their founder. She's great. But monkeys actually gravitate towards men. And so it's just interesting because with wolves, they have this, I think there's a big misconception that they're scary and that they're vicious. And in reality, they're very skittish. And when you come here, you'll see that they're, you know, a lot more afraid of us than we are of them. And so that's one of the reasons why I do like to have women in general, just because the wolves tend to open up more, except my fiance. He has like a different way about him. They love him. But yeah, so I don't know. It's kind of like, I think that's why we call the program Women for Wolves. And we have girls from all walks of life of all ages who've come here and volunteered, like sometimes with their mothers, sometimes girls from 8 years old to literally, you know, women in their 60s. And so it's been an amazing variety of people. And I just am a firm believer in getting girls and women involved in science because there's so few of us. And I guess that's another reason. So we also provide Women for Wolves. We provide things like college counseling and volunteer and job opportunities and just, you know, help with whatever you're passionate about that, you know, is related to animals. So that's kind of one thing. Sorry for the long explanation, but yeah.
No, that's fantastic. I mean, I just can't believe how much you're doing. I mean, and you look so young, and I mean, this is a huge amount of work that you're doing, because it's not just the wolves, but you have all kinds of other animals that you're taking care of and you're saving.
Yes.
So tell us about that. Tell us about the other kind of animals you have. And
yeah, we initially started with wolves. I called the organization Jaws and Paws because I was really passionate about the ocean. So I wanted to marry the two, which is why it's Jaws, like for sharks, and Paws for wolves. And it was kind of awareness based first. So I did a whole campaign and a really, really big push for the banning of shark finning and eating shark fin soup, because they 70 million sharks are actually killed a year just for the soup. So it started like as that. And then we kind of just started, I don't know. I mean, people call you and say, hey, can you help me with this, you know, goat? And I'm like, well, I'm not going to say no, you know? So we ended up, I mean, now we have tortoises, we have goats, we have bunnies, chinchillas, guinea pigs, we have pigs, actual pigs. So I think what's been really amazing is to learn so much about these other animals. Coming into it, I mainly knew wolves and sharks. Wolves, because I was volunteering at different wolf sanctuaries. But with the other animals, they kind of honestly came by accident. And it was initially, what we used to do a lot was basically place animals. So we'd rescue them, get them vetted before we had our actual sanctuary, because we didn't have a physical location. So how we would try to help and make a difference that way was just going to shelters and saying, hey, are there any animals that are about to be put down? We'd take them, we'd adopt them, we'd vet them, we'd get them all cleaned up, we'd adopt them out. So we do that kind of thing a lot. And then it just expanded to farm animals and to birds and to everything else. And as our name got out there, then, like I said, we started getting a lot of calls about, I mean, I've had people ask me if I could save a shark that's outside of a Fry's electronics in a tank. I'm like, what the heck? Like, what am I going to do, you know, with that? Or, I mean, the baby geese, baby monkeys. And so, yeah, these things have just kind of like ended up, you know, resulted in us expanding and rescuing a lot more animals. And as we get our exotic permits for exotic wildlife, our goal is to also include wildlife rehabilitation. But yeah, it kind of, I guess, initially expanded just because people would call us and say, hey, I have this chinchilla, that I can't take care of anymore, or, hey, my neighbor is severely abusing their wolf dog. I see it happen every day. Is there anything we can do? So it just kind of varies, and it's never, never a dull moment. Right before I talked to you, we literally just saved a little baby hummingbird. Wow. So it's, yeah, it's definitely interesting. And the animals that I definitely gravitate towards wolves. Like you said, like I've just like you, since I was little, I was in awe of them, but it's been amazing to be able to work with a lot of the farm animals, like the pigs and the goats, because I think people, just like wolves, they see pigs and think a certain thing immediately, you know, whether it's food or whether they're dirty or, you know, they're only good for one thing. And in reality, they're so intelligent and so sweet and amazing animals. So I guess we in general also like to take in the animals that are misunderstood, because wolves are the most misunderstood of all. And so are sharks. You know, people look at them and think, oh, they're man eating, they're dangerous. And again, in reality, like we kill, you know, they kill 1 to 3 of us a year. We kill almost 100 million at one point. So, and a wolf, for example, hasn't actually killed someone in North America in over 200 years. So it just shows you, like, our fear is honestly just based off of bad press, if you think about it, you know, and negative connotations.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. It's, you know, it's such a misconception with so many of these animals.
It really is. Like, we have people come sometimes, you know, for a private tour or something, and they're obviously excited and want to come meet the wolves, but when they arrive, their first impression, they're like, oh, I'm scared, or oh, they're so scary, I want to see it kill something or eat something. And it's funny, because then by the end of it, they're like, oh my gosh, wolves are the sweetest, you know. So it's just funny to see people's, like, mindsets change when they first come and have kind of this, you know, misconception or preconceived notion about them, for sure.
Yeah, that's such an incredible service that you're offering to them. You know, that's the kind of information that we need to get out. It's a very lopsided view.
Exactly. And that's my ultimate dream and my goal for my foundation. I wanted to make a difference, you know, for animals in the wild. Us helping animals in captivity kind of happened by accident, because I had rescued a dog that I thought was a dog, but she has a tiny bit of wolf in her. And she made me want to research and understand. And I started finding out that wolf dogs in California, they have to get euthanized unless they can go to a sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And so this happens every week, you know, hundreds and hundreds of them, because more and more people want them as pets. Then they realize how it's not that they're aggressive, it's just they're a lot of work, you know. Yeah. And they're not a full dog. They do have some instincts, that not in an aggressive way, like I said, but it's more of, they don't like to be inside, so they might destroy your couch, and you know what I mean. And then people get mad and they drop them at the shelter, and then they get put down. So, but my overall goal, I think, has always really been to ban the poaching of wolves. And like you said, you know, change the way that people actually view them. And recently they got removed from the endangered species list. And that was what really enraged me and made me want to pursue my master's, because I wanted to get involved in policy and really champion for them. And, you know, to really end poaching. I mean, they're about to kill over 90% of the population in, I think it was Idaho. Yeah, they just did Wyoming. So it's just it's an astounding number, you know, over 90%. And that's over 1,000 wolves. So it's just, sometimes I just don't understand the, you know, the mindset, but people think they're going to kill their livestock or going to hurt their kids or their dogs. And they account for 0.01% of livestock deaths in the areas where they inhabit. So it just shows you, like, that's nothing, you know. Cattle and ranchers have their livestock die from so many more human related causes, but instead they'd rather kill wolves, you know? So just an example of, like, misconceptions, really.
And the thing is, I think people don't understand that when they're killing an animal that's so incredibly social and has such a family structure, that they are decimating more than one, you know, they kill one member, they could be decimating an entire pack.
See, it's amazing that you know that, because so many people brush over that. And that's the biggest thing. And we see even here how much the pack matters and how much socialization and those family structures matter, you know? And in the wild, it's tenfold. I mean, it's twofold. It's just like, you have to, like, people have to realize that they are pack animals. They're so similar to us in a lot of ways. And that's what I try to get people to see. Yeah. And so just removing one, because in a pack, only the alpha female and male pair actually breed. And so the whole rest of the pack just rears the young. And it's like the saying, it takes a whole village, you know? Yeah. And I think that's so amazing. They give up their, you know, fertility. They give up their opportunity to have puppies just to make sure that, you know, the puppies that are there survive, and they do everything for their family. So you're absolutely right. Even killing one that's not an alpha, even if it's, they have nanny wolves actually, yeah, which they're starting to study and realize, and call them the nanny, which is really cool. Yeah. And they end up spending a lot of the time with their nannies. And those are the ones that get killed a lot. Because they also are hunters. And so it's just devastating, because then you lose the caretaker for the puppies. So then the alpha male and female can't leave to hunt. So it's just, it actually really can, like you said, you know, decimate a pack and even a whole population by just killing a few. So I think that's what's like so heart-wrenching and devastating, you know, about it, especially like just in experiencing them and being around them, you know, and seeing their true nature.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's true of so many of the animals that are hunted so badly, that they're just incredible, you know, strong family units.
Yes.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. It is, I think it's a really a big, education, that needs to be brought out to people so that,
yeah,
they can understand that this is
exactly
happening.
It's,
yeah,
yes, exactly.
So you have a degree in wildlife biology.
No, it's actually marine science, which, okay, it's, they didn't have a wildlife biology or marine biology program at Cal, where I went. And so, and I'm there now for my master's, and now they have it, of course, but they didn't when I was in my undergrad. So I did marine science and conservation resource studies, which is pretty much conservation biology and marine biology. And then now for my master's, it's a master's of forestry, and it's wildlife biology specifically.
Wow. Wow.
But forest related, yeah, creatures.
And so do you have to get extra, is that enough for you to have a sanctuary, or did you have to go get permits for setting up your sanctuary?
I'm so happy you asked me that. Because people always are curious about how I have, you know, people all the time ask me how to start their own or how to start their own nonprofit. So you don't have to have any academic credentials at all to start a sanctuary. Most of the sanctuary owners I know actually don't have any. What you have to have, though, is, yes, 1.5 trillion permits. And basically, you have to have years of experience to show. So even like, it's different in every county and every state. But for example, we started out as just a dog rescue, and that was the first permit we had to get. And to do that, you have to show that you have 2+ years experience, like working with dogs, like as a trainer in a kennel, like at a vet office, something. And you have to have someone sign off on it. So you literally have to have like an old boss sign off on it and write you a recommendation. It's a whole process.
Yeah.
And that's just one part. On top of that, there's, endless. I'll tell you right now, don't ever start anything in LA County. That's for sure.
Yeah.
There's endless, you know, paperwork and things you have to pass. You also have to pass USDA, you know, which we have, and you have to have your fish and wildlife permit. You have to have, there's you know, many. And in order to get some of those, it's mainly just experience they want. That's really all it is. And then on top of that, they also want to come and inspect your facility and see how you're caring for the animals. You also have to, kind of be interdisciplinary. Even if you don't have a degree, like that doesn't matter. Like I said, most of the sanctuary owners I know just went right into, you know, usually a lot of them started out in animal training. I think that's changing now, but you really just have to make sure you have experience. Just start, like, that's what I always tell people, is to just start volunteering places. I started working at the Monterey Bay Aquarium when I was 13. And so I just had a ton of experience basically to put on, you know, my resume essentially. Yeah. And so that's one thing that really, really helped me. And I had worked with a variety of animals at the aquarium, like sea otters, penguins. And so when you have like kind of exotic animals also to add, they really like to see that, because it means, you know, you definitely will understand just the exotics more in general. And wolf dogs, it's interesting because they're not considered exotic. Wolves, honestly, I think they're probably like the easiest ones, they say, to get permits for out of the like exotic animals. What's really difficult is to get permits for animals like monkeys and, you know what I mean? Monkeys and, you know, elephants and giraffes and zebras and things like that. But that's actually definitely a dream of ours and a goal of ours, to rescue animals from the exotic wildlife trade. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you don't have to by any means have a degree. I think it definitely helps, but at the same time, it also hurt in a way.
Why is that?
Because all the time, I guess I won't say hurt. I think just maybe didn't really help as much as I thought it would have. Mm-hmm. Because you can't ever get knowledge or experience in a classroom like you can when you're actually doing it, you know?
Yeah.
So me, you know, and I graduated in 2013 from college. I moved to LA and I actually used to do music. So that's what got me to Southern California. Mm-hmm. But I started working in dog rescue just on my own, really. Like I said, I would pull dogs from the shelter before being put down. And I became really passionate about that. And that's when I started seeing the wolf dogs and really getting involved in that. But I think a good way is to just volunteer. That's just, that's all they want to see when you're serving your own sanctuary, that you've actually worked, you know, somewhere and had experience.
So, right. Yeah. Now, so who is breeding these wolf dogs, and is that an illegal thing? Like, why are they not being stopped? Clearly it's creating a problem.
Yes. So they're working on stopping it. It's illegal to own a wolf, a full 100% wolf. Here we have some that are pretty high content. We call them high content, which means they're a higher percentage of wolf, and some are lower content. And we haven't gotten them tested, so there's no way to know. And that's where the gray area is. So they make it illegal in most states to own a wolf, but then a lot of the breeders, how they get away with it is they say they're wolf dogs, which they are, but it still doesn't make it right, you know, because the more that they're breeding these animals, they're really just doing it to make money. And there was a big influx of wolf dog breeders after shows like Game of Thrones. There was a direct correlation. There's a whole article. I think it was on BBC that did it, but that was talking about the influx of huskies and northern breed looking dogs and wolves in shelters. Because people, you know, they're a lot more desired, you know, because of shows like that, more than they've ever been. Wow. So if you go to the shelter now, for example, and I'm sure this would probably be pretty true in Maryland, I know like most shelters have mainly, if you just walk around, you'll see huskies everywhere. Whereas before it was, you know, chihuahuas and pit bulls.
Yeah.
Those are the animals that got surrendered the most, especially like in this, you know, in California and Southern California area. But now when you go to a shelter, half of it is taken up by huskies. And that's because so many people want, you know, wolf-like looking dogs. And they don't realize, I say huskies because they also have a very similar behavior and they're always crossbreeded with wolves. So yeah. a lot of the wolf dog breeders, their preferred animal or subspecies to breed wolves with is usually huskies or malamutes, dogs that kind of resemble them
right.
to get that look.
Yeah.
So it's really, I don't know, it's really difficult. They're trying to stop it and they're trying to stop the breeding of them, but I'm not really sure how they'll be able to, because dog and wolf DNA is so, it's literally almost exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest challenges is what happens when a wolf dog gets dropped off at the shelter. A lot of the times, if people don't know or don't have experience with wolf dogs, you know, a shelter officer or manager, I mean, might say, that looks like a wolf. That's okay, that's a wolf hybrid. And then when they deem that as a wolf hybrid, then they have to get put down if they don't find a home in usually 30 days.
Oh, God.
And so what they don't realize by doing that, what they're actually doing, you know, they're, I mean, deeming them to die. And that's one of the biggest problems. We have some wolf dogs here that I think have almost no wolf in them, but that were from the shelter because someone deemed them as wolf dogs.
Yeah.
So it's a really confusing thing. It's a lot of people do it. We've rescued, I mean, we have some wolves from hoarders. There was a woman with over 120 in literally these tiny, tiny little cages. It was horrific. Just weird things like that. And when we asked her, she said, well, I'm trying to make a miniature breed of wolf. And she had a bunch of little Pomeranians too. Oh. So she was, I don't even know like how you could breed those two animals. But that was her goal. And luckily she got shut down because we did a whole police report. And it was a big operation. But there's a lot of situations like that where people just want to essentially make money, and they can make a few $100 to even $1,000 or more on wolf dogs because they're so desired now.
Yeah.
So, and when we asked the breeder, the lady, we said, you know, like, what do you think when people call you a hoarder? Cause she was kind of infamous in the area. And she's like, well, you know, the puppies feed the other dogs. I have to have puppies. I have to, you know, keep having puppies because they feed us.
Now, wait a minute.
And what I'm like, that? But if you keep having puppies, you're just going to keep having more animals.
Is she feeding the puppies to the wolves?
Oh no. She's basically saying like, I sell them.
Oh, okay.
And make them, that's so funny. Honestly, I wasn't surprised because she told us some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
She had shot one in the head before we got there. There were frozen dead puppies literally on the ground. And she was like, oh, they didn't make it overnight. So she, there were no shelters for them. I mean, a lot of times I think people think, oh, we're, you know, they're wolves. They can withstand really, really drastic temperatures. But no, I mean, just because they can doesn't mean they should, and they can't, you know, especially the ones mixed with dogs. So, but yeah, I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the horror stories that we've seen.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
I read your slaughterhouse.
It's shocking. We have one. Oh yeah. That one, I still have, like, I literally still have nightmares every so often about that place.
Yeah.
That place was horrible. And it's so sad because the fourth pig, I don't know if you read about, if I put that in there. Did you hear about the piglet that died?
I can't remember.
Well, so she, the guy picked them up by their hind legs and slammed them to stun them against the wall.
Yeah, I did.
It was awful. And hit it to the first one. Yeah. And she ended up having brain damage and she couldn't drink. She couldn't eat. She just stopped having motor functions in general. And so she had to get put to sleep because she couldn't even breathe on her own eventually. She's just an adorable little baby piglet. And their mom was dead in the stall next to them. So, I mean, yeah, it's shocking. And sometimes we do have animals from people who are really, really good people who are just, who just couldn't take care of them anymore, or were moving, or it just became too much financially. So it's not, you know, to me, I don't think there's anything wrong with surrendering an animal if you know that it's going to go to a better home and you know that, you know, it's for the best. But what people do is they surrender them to the shelter, and that's horrible because no matter how pretty the dog is, whatever the shelter chooses to categorize that dog as, it's going to doom them for life, you know? And so it's just terrible all the way around to surrender animals to shelters, but especially wolf dogs,
yeah,
you know, because they have no other option really.
Right.
So that's what's like definitely devastating about it.
And so the wolf dogs that you have to stay with you, right? They can't ever go and be adopted by somebody else.
That's actually a really, really good question. So yes and no. The ones that are higher content, like I said, that are higher percentage of wolf, those can't be adopted out. One, they can't be adopted out legally. And two, they couldn't be adopted out anyways. You can see the behavior difference. They hate being inside. You know, they just don't even want necessarily anything to do with people. Like they're loving, but a lot of them have been through so much that, you know, some of them have never even been touched by people. So those ones obviously can't be adopted out. But we do have four that we are adopting out right now that are really low content. I honestly don't think they have wolf in them. Mm-hmm. That's how low content they are. And I think they were just categorized as that. And so, yeah, when we do come across the really low content ones that are super sweet and, I mean, they're all sweet, but a lot more, you know, accustomed to people is what I meant by that. Then yes, we adopt them out because here we try to give them the best life we can. You know, they have nice enclosures. They get fed meat and, you know, every day, and they get walked and they get loved on, but it's still not the wild. And it's still not as good as having an individual relationship as if it's a pet, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
You know? And so I feel like some of the dogs we have, they deserve that. They deserve to be in a home, and they could be. So that's why we, you know, kind of aim to adopt those ones out, just because it saves room also for the ones that literally can't go anywhere else. I mean, we have ones who we can't exactly just leash and take to the vet even, you know, which is why we have an amazing mobile vet, exotic and regular vet. They're incredible. But they're able to come to us, and we're so far out there. So it becomes difficult. And the county gives us animals a lot. So we have how many? We have, I think, half of our, or a little more than half, 13 or 14 are from different counties. And we have five that we got about a year ago that are from Lancaster out here in Southern California. And they were abandoned in a trailer park. And so, and they, I don't think have ever been touched by people to this day. We still can't touch them. They're so scared and terrible. We don't know what they've been through, and we'll sit in there and read a book and spend time with them and throw treats at them, and it helps. And they've opened up more, but it's really difficult because they, you know, aren't really animals we can just leash and take to the vet in case of an emergency. Like I said, or even there's a lot of fires out here, and we're approaching fire season. We always get nervous, even though we have our evacuation plan. It's never easy, you know?
Yeah.
When you have animals, you can't just, all right, come on, boy, you know?
Yeah.
Hop in the crate. We do have wolves that'll do that because they've been more socialized. But We definitely have some that are just nowhere near that. And so it does make it really difficult, you know, and it just makes me angry. I get angry when I think about the people who raised them, because they don't realize what they did by not, you know, by neglecting them and by abusing them. You're literally making it so they can't ever have a regular life, you know? And honestly, people ask me this all the time too. They're like, can you release the ones that are more wolfy to the wild? And I wish, you know, I wish I could do that. They don't allow it. Especially because there's no wolves in California. Well, we actually, it's funny, wolves returned for the first time in over 150 years, but there's literally one. There's not really a place to release them, literally. he's just hanging out, trying to find a mate. But so it's difficult. My dream would be to, you know, find a plot or, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres in Alaska somewhere and just have all of them be free. But it sucks. We can't do that. So we try to give them the best possible life that they can have here. And, you know, there's so many things I want to do to add to that, but it's difficult. It's costly, obviously.
I can imagine. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine being able to handle the number of animals that are brought to you or that you're made aware of. I mean, it just must be endless.
It's endless and it's heartbreaking because I hate turning down animals, but we have so much, you know, here now. We have 18 wolf dogs and a total of like almost 40 something animals. So yeah, you know, it's a lot. And so I'm kind of at the point now where we're trying to make sure our sanctuary is the best that it can be for each species, you know? And so that's just improving their structures and making them, you know, ready for all of the elements, really, especially when you're out here in the middle of nowhere in California, the weather changes so drastically. It's either, you know, 95 degrees one day and then the next day it might, you never know, like it might even come close to snowing. So it snows out here in the mountains where we are.
Yeah.
So, and we have some tropical animals. So there's always like, you know, things you have to do to make sure that, you know, you can emulate their environment as best possible. But it's hard because it can never be exactly the same. And like I said, I wish that all of them could just be in the wild, you know?
Yeah.
But they're not safe there either.
No.
That's what's so sad is they're not safe with us. They're not safe in the wild because of us. So it's just, it's such a double-edged sword, you know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've made it a bad situation. So do you have, how much property do you have to be able to handle all this? Is that an okay question to ask?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. We have 10 acres, so we have a really nice amount of land. And there's requirements by like what we were talking about before regarding animal control in LA County and Fish and Wildlife. And so we have to have our enclosures a certain length, and ours are two to three times the size of a normal wolf enclosure at a sanctuary. So they're nice and spacious, which is good. So they at least have that, you know, and they have each other, you know. They love socializing and being in a pack, and sometimes we have to move them around to kind of find better situations that fit. Sometimes they outgrow each other, just like with people, you know. It's always an adventure.
I was gonna ask you how you figure out how to put together.
It's it's definitely a challenge. It is something that you definitely have to study and know wolves and wolf dogs and dogs, honestly, in general. But we really just kind of, one of the main things we do is we'll walk them together. And this is good advice for anyone who's trying to integrate a new animal or a new dog into their home with their, you know, the dog that they already have. Doing walks is really, really important. Definitely helps them bond And, you know, when they're sniffing new scents together, it's kind of a bonding strategy. And just even being out of their enclosure, they're less territorial. If you were to just put them in together, that would be bad, you know? So it has to be kind of a process. Yeah. But we really usually pair animals by, I'll look at who has an alpha mentality and who has a more submissive mentality. And I will be careful to not put two alphas together that are the same gender, unless they just, for some freak circumstance, they happen to get along. But wolves tend to be same sex aggressive with each other. Mm-hmm. So females fight females and males fight males. That's not always the case, but that's usually the pattern. So we have, what's really interesting is we have more alpha females than males, and the alpha of our whole pack is a female. Wow. And that's something that I started to look into, and I want to go on to get my PhD to study this, the alpha female, and how there's a big kind of misconception again about wolves, and just even the term alpha male, that we, you know, termed it as being male, but in reality, they're starting to find in the wild, there's actually even more females who, even though there's a pair, there's always an alpha male and female, one kind of is in charge over the other, if that makes sense. Right. And it tends to be the female. So it's, we have a few alpha females here, and anytime they walk by each other, even, you know, one walks by the other's enclosure, they're just not happy. Like, they just hate each other. And so we just, there's some that you just know, just won't, it's not going to happen. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's a process, and it takes a lot of patience for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
And it can be scary. I mean, not anymore because I've been doing this for a decent amount of time, but I still get a little bit nervous because you want them to get along. And we've had situations where we've worked with two to like eventually live together, and they're doing great. And then they're living together and everything's fine. And months down the line, they just snap on each other, you know? And it's also, you have to think they're not in a natural environment, you know? So that's one of the factors. And another key factor is it's almost like studying a person in prison or something, you know. I hope it's better than prison for them, but if you're just studying a person in an enclosure all day, you're not really gonna, you know, so you're never gonna fully know them. Their behavior is not gonna be really authentic to who they are until they're out and about and doing their own thing, you know. So that's kind of how I look at it. But it's really interesting because I also want to study wolves in the wild and bring that back here and see how they differ in captivity and what that does to their mental, you know, and what that does to them over generations. Because I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, biological and just side effects in general.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That would be super interesting. Where would you go to do something like that? Like there aren't a whole bunch of, like you say, they're sort of going after the population. They repopulate, and then they decide they're going to kill them all again. Yes, so
exactly,
you know, it's just kind of like
ridiculous.
Isle Royale, I know, is a place I used to want to go to see the wolves.
That is, where is that? Canada, right?
I think it's off of Michigan somewhere. Is it Great Lakes somewhere? I thought it was Michigan, maybe.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That one I have to look at. I didn't know.
That's
amazing. Yeah. One of the main places that a lot of my professor, who's a wolf biologist, he did his PhD and everything at Yellowstone. And that's where a lot of people study wolves because it's one of the few places where they're entirely protected in the States. And they're a really rare case because they were reintroduced and they thrived. And that was in 1995. They were reintroduced and their numbers went up so much that then, yeah, people wanted to start killing them again.
Yeah.
But they started thriving and doing really well. And people saw over time that, I don't know if you heard of this, but the ecosystem started to change. Rivers actually came back.
Yeah.
Beavers returned, eagles, grizzly bears. Everything started to thrive again because that's what wolves do. I mean, even here we've seen, you know, vegetation growing for the first time, where it's a desert here. And I truly believe it's because they help keep the pet, like they help keep a lot of pest animals away, that, you know, destroy vegetation, and they help ward off ground squirrels and rats. And so, yeah, I mean, they're crucial to their surrounding ecosystem. So it's definitely something I want to pursue for sure.
Yeah. 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 There was that amazing documentary called, How Wolves Change Rivers, I think is what it was called.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That's it.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So it's all that apex predator, being so crucial to the, you know, health of the environment.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
So interesting. Okay. So I wanted to ask you, when, if you get a call, like you said, you had been called to, that somebody had a wolf dog and they were abusing them. Do you have to go through the police to go after them or animal control, or can you just as an organization go to them and confiscate that animal?
So I've never dealt with the police when it comes to an animal, except for when we sent that report about the hoarder. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to the police if there's something really major, but animal control takes care of it. So usually animal control is the go-to in those situations. But we also have just gone in there on our own and paraded like someone who wanted to buy a dog or something, you know, to kind of get a look. Mm. So we've gone like undercover before, essentially. Yeah. And just to scope out the situation. And there's, I've had situations where I've talked, like the hoarder, for example, she let us take 21 wolves. And she said she was in over her head. You know, she usually charged people for them. And obviously we weren't going to do that. I was like, look, I'll take these guys off your hands. You won't have to feed them. You'll save money. I'll make sure that they get the best care possible. They'll get vetted. They all had parvo. They're super sickly. So it kind of depends. It's definitely important to have good communication skills though, and to be able to talk to people and understand their side. Because even in the situation of this woman who had been severely abusing a wolf dog, she loved them. You know, she truly believed she was doing something right. And if I had gone in there, you know, with hostility, I probably wouldn't have been able to save those wolf dogs. So we do work with animal control. That's the main one. If it's really bad, I would go to the police, but it's been a while since I've done that. Usually we can handle it on our own, but it's kind of like you start on your own and then it might even reach out to other sanctuaries or organizations who've been around longer that have more, you know, that aren't as, wet behind the ears as us, I guess. And they have, you know, a lot of, you know, many more strategies, I guess, than we do, just since I'm still kind of getting the hang of things. So it's nice to bring other people in and we'll do rescues together and we can kind of like benefit each other that way. But I'll start by just trying, you know, to do it on our own initially and just kind of having a conversation with the person and just being like, hey, like, you know, this is happening. You're abusing your dog or whatever it is. Do you, you don't even really want it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of having an honest, the open conversation. And then if that doesn't work, then you go to another organization to try to get their help. If that doesn't work, you go to animal control. And then if that doesn't work, you go to the police. So that's kind of the chain of, you know, events that happens.
Yeah. So it really is a diplomatic process that you're going through.
Absolutely.
What kind of effect has this COVID pandemic had on you guys? Has it been beneficial or has it made it harder?
You know, it's funny. I think probably a lot of people and a lot of business, I'm sure you feel the same way. It's been both. It's been obviously harder for all of the main reasons, like money. I mean, first of all, it's really hard to raise money when you can't open to the public, you know? Uh-huh. We also can't open to the public right now because of LA County and there's new permits that we're required to get. So it's not really COVID. But the other thing is, it's been difficult because people are, I mean, people are focused and worried about their own lives and their own problems, which is completely understandable. So I think there's not as many, we used to have a lot more donors, a lot more private donors. But I think where COVID has actually benefited us tremendously is it's given us a grace period to really just, you know, when we actually purchased this land, it was covered in junk and glass. And wow. I mean, it was just a complete mess. And so we're still cleaning that up. And it's kind of enabled us to focus on, you know, those projects and just getting those things done. But there has been ways where it's affected us negatively for sure. And funding is the main thing, which I'm sure a lot of people are finding, you know, a similar experience.
Yeah.
In dealing with COVID. So,
well, I just think it's amazing what you're doing.
We would definitely love to have you out here. I have to do a feeding for, cause we're feeding some of the wolves 3 times a day to help them gain weight a little bit. But I was going to ask you, I would love to, if we could try a Reiki session with one of the animals virtually. I think that would be so cool, and it would be really great cross promoting and, you know, branding for us both. I think it'd be really, really awesome.
Yeah, I would love that. All you have to do is send me a picture and a name, and I will do a session okay. from here. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
it's that's all energy. Amazing.
It's so all excited. Yeah. It's all energy. Energy travels.
Would you be okay with recording it?
Well, there's really not much to record.
Or is it like? I don't really know how it's.
I'm just sitting quietly, and sometimes I'll use like a stuffed animal as a sort of a, what do you call it? Like a surrogate kind of a thing. Like I'm sending the energy. Like I'm using.
Yes.
The animal is a way, you know, just as a form to work with.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
I can also just, you know, sit and picture the animal and just do it all in my mind and send the energy that way.
That is so cool. I would definitely love to do
that. I would love to do that. I would love to.
We'll for sure be in touch and, you know, let me know maybe if there's a time next week that works for you.
Yeah, just yeah.
There's definitely a few animals. If you're ever in California, for sure, you need to come meet the wolves. And
I would definitely love that. I would love it. My brother lives in LA, so I'll be there sometime.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Okay, yeah. No,
for sure.
Is there anything else you need from me, or is there anything else, you know, you wanted to ask?
Yeah, well, I want to make sure that people know that you have a website. It's called jawspaws.org. And you can sponsor a wolf. You can donate. You have some adoptions up there, yes. Like kitty cats and
yes.
things like that.
Exactly. We'll be putting up more adoptions really soon.
Yeah, so that's really awesome. And I don't know. Are you doing your Wolfstagram hikes where you get to go on a hike and then get a picture taken with your wolves?
I wish we could. We can't do it right now, but we're definitely going to start that back up again soon.
Yeah. So that's something that's probably been a COVID victim.
Yeah, no.
We definitely want everyone to go there. You've got a really great website. It talks about your animals and what you're doing. You are doing a lot also with the oceans and the marine wildlife. And would love to have everybody check that out. And
thank you so much.
Give you some support for sure.
We could absolutely use it right now. So I it's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll get it out to as many people as we can. I will let you know when the video will come out. I'm going to edit it and get it ready to go out.
Okay.
Then you can send it to all your supporters as well.
I would love to. I will for sure. I will. Yeah. I think there's some great cross, you know, promoting that we can do. So
yeah.
I'll post it on the foundation page. And I'll also put it on my personal site too, or personal page.
Yeah. I think the more we can get out about it, the better. You know, I think now is the time. Now's the time we need to be thinking about the animals and reevaluating how we're treating the animals and the planet so that we can all survive on here together in a nice,
absolutely. Thank you for everything you do. I think what you're doing is amazing. I think it's really inspiring. And I think it's so needed. We, like I said, there's so many animals that we have that have been through so much trauma and neglect. And so I think it's important. I think people only think of Reiki for people and they don't realize how animals are vessels for energy, and animals read energy, you know, much better than we do. So they're even more reactive towards
they
it.
They are. They're,
so yeah. Thank you
for everything absolutely that you do. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate
it. It was so great talking to you.
I love that you were able to take the time. I really appreciate it. I know you're so busy. And I look forward to keeping in touch with you.
I have been wanting to do this. Me too. I have been wanting to do this. So sorry it took so long, but I'm looking forward to connecting next week, and I'll send you a photo of the animal for sure.
Yeah, definitely do that, because I would love to work with somebody and or multiple, whatever goes for you. And good luck with your master's degree and your exams and all that kind of stuff.
Thank you. I know, I literally have exams on the 11th. I'm like, back in school. But yeah, no, thank you. I really appreciate that. And let me know if you need anything else, but we'll talk soon either way.
Okay. All right. That's great. Thank you so much, Anjali. It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much, Jenny.
All right.
You too. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hello Animal Talks, hosted by me, Jenny Worthington, production by Stacy Spencer of Going Graphic, sound engineered by Jimmy Richards of Bay Central Media, and music written and performed by Jake Shepard.